Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Succoth in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes Damim between Succoth and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the valley between them. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield-bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? I am not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time he was very old. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to the war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to the camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines." Early in the morning, David left the flock in care of a shepherd, loaded up and set out, as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle's lines and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from the lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see this man? He keeps coming out. He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speak with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom do you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." "Now, what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth. But David said to Saul, Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned to me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God, the Lord, who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, Go, and the Lord be with you. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around, because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I am not used to them. So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in a pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. David said to the Philistine, You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, and I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took a hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from his sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Sharaim road to Gath and Ekron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered the camp. David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. He put the Philistine's weapon in his own tent. As Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine, he said to Abner, commander of the army, Abner, whose son is that young man? Abner replied, As surely as you live, your majesty, I do not know. The king said, Find out whose son this young man is. As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, and David still holding the Philistine's head. Whose son are you, young man? Saul asked him. And David said, I am the son of your servant, Jesse of Bethlehem. Friends, Romans, countrymen, welcome to episode number 12 of Caro Caravaggio here on Campus 103.7 with your host Jeremy Grech. And today we are in for an over-the-top dramatic episode. We started off with a little segment from the Bible, actually. When I tried to rework or try to come up with it differently, I think that perhaps the way that it was written there might be enough and all the details are in order. And that sets up the main painting that we will be discussing today. In fact, David with the head of Goliath. At this point, Caravaggio has run away from the islands of Malta on board a ship or a small boat and made his way on to Syracuse, where he would be painting none other than the burial of St. Lucy. Then he goes over to Messina and then back finally in Naples. And it is here, in this moment, where Caravaggio, in my opinion, would be at his darkest. A man who is once again on the run. A man that has just messed up once again. All he is just a painter, a misunderstood man that keeps on getting into trouble. But to the world out there, after getting into a brawl, after almost shooting a member of the order, Michelangelo can easily be perceived as none other than a psycho killer.
I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax.
ladies and gentlemen, here we are ready to talk and discuss the famous beheading of Goliath. Over here we have David with the head of Goliath, an interesting painting that stands as a usual oil on canvas, 125 centimeters in length this time, and only 101 centimeters in width. A portrait painting, not a portrait, that has been put up in Villa Borghese. You can definitely see it in Rome, such a brilliant and wonderful museum, full of Bernini's as well. Definitely something that you should not miss up if you are in Bella Roma. So, this painting, before we dive into the message, the meaning behind it, why was it technically done? Caravaggio was now once again a fugitive running away from law and order, and he needed assistance. He needed to get back in the good books of the Pope, of the Knight, whoever was hunting him. And so, in a very poetic form, he paints David with the head of Goliath. The background is simply dark. We don't really have much to it, but we have one main protagonist, and the message inside is quite deep. So, let's get to painting this canvas. Over here we have none other than a central protagonist, the only man in this painting, and we have a young David. David over here is not extremely exposed. Only half of his chest has been left bare, revealing his left hand in which he clutches quite passionately the hair on the head of Goliath. This young David here, he tilts his head, his eyes determinedly fixed on the severed head of Goliath, does not show you any triumph. It shows you as if pity, this man that was so proud that now his head is in my hand. Look at how the mighty has fallen. David's physique is quite lean, also very skinny. Not a lot of muscular definition can be seen to show you the contrast between the giant who was Goliath and the young man who was David. David is beardless, he's got quite a baby face too, and his shoulders are now leaning in the direction of the severed head. In a counterposition, we also notice his clothes. A linen shirt, which can be folded in several times, is covering the right-hand side, which is also in shadow, and therefore bringing him to hold the sword of Goliath. The sword of Goliath, which, once you look at it in detail, has a deep message. Humility kills pride. This sword is clean, yet it rests upon the feet almost and the trousers of David. Going once again into the very traditional mustard-looking color that was very popular during Caravaggio's period, we see this replicated in so many other paintings. When it comes to this painting, and when we look at David here, it doesn't stand out too much. But what does he mean by this? We've seen paintings such as the Seven Acts of Mercies, where there are so many characters. The Carchubs bringing in tree people. We have many others with such crowded feelings into it. But this one is one of self-reflection. A possible message that he's trying to send to Scipione Borghese, a silent scream. And it is a message inscribed in the sword. Humility kills pride. Caravaggio's message is quite clear. He is sorry. He apologizes for all that he's done. He understands that he has messed up over and over again, and just for one last time, he believes that he can get things back in order, which is why he paints this for Scipione Borghese, who was technically related to the Pope at the time, the very same Pope, Pope Paul V, whom Caravaggio had also done a portrait right before getting into trouble. Can Borghese put in a word with this man, Borghese being quite a collector of Caravaggio's. But what is Michele trying to tell us with this? Michelangelo possibly depicts himself twice in this painting. We see him as the young man, and we also see him as the head of Goliath. The head of Goliath, as we get into the detail, shows us a very pale, dead face with a huge scar on his forehead, half being hidden away by the scruffy hair, unmistakably the scruffy hair of Caravaggio. His eyes are open in expression as he would have been surprised when struck, and his jaw weighs down with gravity, alluding and also indicating that blood is still dripping from the huge head of Goliath. But this is yet another self-portrait. This is not just Goliath. This is Caravaggio as an older man. His younger self has killed his older man. Who has he become? And with what weapon does he kill him? What is inscribed in it? Humility kills pride. Is this his very own apology? Is he trying to say that he is truly now a proper changed man? Well, whatever the message is, painting definitely speaks louder than what it tries to entail. And over here, we have our tormented protagonist trying to fight his inner demons like never before. Can his nature ever be tamed? Or will it simply add more blood upon the stones?
To all things housed in her silence, nature offers a violence. The bear that keeps to his own line, the wolf that seeks always its own. The world that hardens is a harsher winter hold. The parent forced to eat its young before it grows. Every bird gone unheard, starving where the ground is froze. The winter sunrise, red on white, like blood upon the snow.
Blood upon the snow.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are back to close off yet another episode, episode number 12, the penultimate episode before the very last. And honestly, I have no idea how much fun this has been to bring all of these stories to all of you. And in fact, we will be ending with a bang. Next up, in the next episode, we will be closing off with the famous martyrdom of Saint Ursula. An interesting painting, I would have to say, if I have to be brutally honest, not the biggest of masterpieces that he's done, but the message is also quite deep, quite heavy. This is one of the last pieces of works and arts that Caravaggio would execute before his untimely death in 1610. In fact, next episode, we have a lot to discuss, a lot to talk about, but with that, my dear friends, till next time, as per usual, should you have any questions or curiosities, or you simply want to give us some feedback or get in touch, follow me on Greg.Jeremy on Instagram, on my socials, or leave us a message on the Campus 103.7 page. But till then, my dear friends, fair winds and following seas.